Johnny Carson needs no introduction, but my guest Fred DeCordova probably does. Since 1970, Fred DeCordova has been the executive producer of The Tonight Show. He once described his role as chief traffic cop, talent scout, number one fan, and critic all rolled into one. DeCordova was 60 by the time he joined The Tonight Show, and he was already a seasoned movie and television veteran. He directed many films, probably the best known of which is Bedtime for Bonzo, starring Ronald Reagan. On television, his credits as producer or director include The Burns and Allen Show, The Jack Benny Program, and The Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. DeCordova has written an autobiography titled Johnny Came Lately. Its publication is putting the variety show producer into the guest seat for a change. I spoke with him from the NPR Bureau in New York. I asked him where he sits during the taping of The Tonight Show.
Well, Johnny sits behind the desk that you've all seen often. And then there's the couch. And at the end of the couch, in a chair, an uncomfortable chair, which gives me a perfect view of Johnny's eyes and vice versa, I am there about 12 feet away from his nibs.
So you're really sitting very close. Now, you say in your book that you function as a sounding board when the going gets rough. Would you explain?
Well, I think after all the years that Johnny and I have worked together, I have a pretty good read on his reactions to what's going on. And he sometimes looks at me for verification, like it's going well or not. And those are just little minor eye moues. And I also have on my left, which is one of the most vital and compelling parts of television, a button, which means it's time to go to commercial. And although most of the world loves to get up and go to the bathroom, it's my ability to get up and go over to Johnny and say, this is going great, or why don't we go to the next guest?
So when you press that button to go to a commercial, are you sometimes doing that to bail out of a tough spot?
Yes, I think that's... let's not say a tough spot, but one that isn't going quite as well as we hoped it would.
Now, you're making this all sound very calm and organized. I want to read a quote from what Robert Blake said to Kenneth Tynan for the Kenneth Tynan Profile of Johnny Carson in The New Yorker some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Blake talking about what it's like to be a guest on The Tonight Show. He says, you better be good, or they'll go to the commercial after 2 minutes. The producer, all the federales are sitting like 6 feet away from that couch, and they're right on top of you, man, just watching you. And when they go to a break, they get on the phone, they talk upstairs, they talk to Christ, who knows? They talk all over the place about how this person's going over, how that person's going over. They whisper in John's ear. John gets on the phone and he talks. And you're sitting there watching, thinking, what are they going to hang somebody? And then when the camera comes back again, John will either ask you something else or he'll say, our next guest is. It sounds crazy.
Well, it's a little more controlled than that. There is a phone, from me to the booth. There is no phone next to Johnny. We have to do evaluating, and as you do in your business or anybody else, whether something is good enough or exciting, amuses Johnny and amuses the audience. Those are our two goals. Whether it's going well enough to go to the next guest or to say, let's go a little longer with this man or woman. And then there is also the terrible problem that if you go too long with a couple of your guests, you have to say that, we're terribly sorry that so-and-so isn't with the show tonight, but we hope we'll have time the next time. So you don't like to bump people. But that, again, is dependent on how much the audience and how much Johnny are being amused.
So you're not worrying about hurting a guest's feelings while you're making these decisions?
Yes, I am. But we do start out with the fact that everybody gets paid whether they go on or not, and not that it's a munificent sum. But it is almost a guarantee that if that person is available in the immediate future, that person will be on and not be the last guest.
I'm speaking with Fred DeCordova, who has been, since 1970, the executive producer of The Tonight Show, and has written an autobiography titled Johnny Come Lately.
No, Johnny Came Lately.
Johnny Came Lately. Gosh, you know, I've been reading a Johnny Come Lately to myself all this time.
You should be ashamed.
Now, you're watching the show as it happens. I always imagined you being in your office watching it on TV so that you could see what it's actually like as a program, where it would look really different than it would in real life.
Is that a question?
Well, I guess, do you run back afterwards and actually watch the broadcast to see how it looked on TV?
No, but all our shows are on tape, and if there's anything that strikes me in the actual course of the show that could have been improved or could have been handled differently, I certainly run that tape the next morning. Since we do a show, we tape it at 5:30 in the evening for airing that night, there isn't much time to do any fixing. since obviously the 5:30 show ends at 6:30, which is 9:30 in New York. And so our errors, if they exist, and of course they do from time to time, are there for the world to see. But we try not to make them twice in a row.
Well, no guest gets on the show without your approval. What's the pecking order in terms of the lineup for the evening? How do you schedule what the lineup is?
I think you try to, if you go way back to vaudeville, or even in a book, you try to mix your show so that there aren't all musicians, all authors, all camera freaks, or all civilians. You try to mix it so that the audience, and we know it's a vast one, gets a little bit of each possible area of entertainment. The normal running order would be the star, the comedian, the musician, and that goes sometimes in another area. We have...
And then the book author, right?
The book author is the bumpy, ordinarily, yes. I've bumped myself twice in the last 2 weeks.
You know, I was wondering if you were going to go on and plug your book on the show.
I certainly put my name up there, and since those guests are chosen by me, there that name was. But then the writers went on strike, and I've had to bump myself twice.
Huh. Now, you know, The Tonight Show has all these rituals that accompany it. I mean, the show opens exactly the same all the time, and it has for years and years. You know, Ed McMahon, if he's there, starts it, does the whole "Here's Johnny," does the whole "Hi-yo," and then, you know, bows to Carson. And then there's the banter between Carson and the band leader and Ed McMahon. Do you know how any of that started?
Well, I was a young child at the time. But I believe it was what all you want to acknowledge, the fact that Johnny is there, that Ed is that person, and Doc is that person, and the band is available. I think you do what people, and I don't want to sound being psychologically involved with The Tonight Show, but I do think that people have learned that The Tonight Show is what it has been the night before and the night before, not necessarily in subject matter, but that they, as they get into bed and turn out the light, ending that day, they see what they have seen and what they've enjoyed seeing for so long. I also believe that the people, the shows that have tried to scramble the format, the talk variety format, are among the quickest to leave.
So you think it's a good investment to just keep those rituals there all the time, have it be predictable?
I think if you kiss your wife good evening when you come home and goodbye when you leave in the morning, that's a ritual that should be continued, and that's in a sense what we're doing.
Another kissing ritual is when a woman guest is on the show, she has to kiss Johnny before sitting down on the couch.
She doesn't have to.
But she always does, right?
She also lifts the left leg and bends it to the back, and I don't know why they do that either.
Are there frequently newcomers who are just in shock about being on the show because they've watched the show for the last 20 years of their life?
You can tell, and their eyes betray them. There are lots of people who come on for the first show, and some who come on for the 50th time, who you can see their eyes dancing, and that they're just fine backstage. They're laughing and enjoying themselves. They come through that curtain, and you can see them freeze on the way over to that famous chair. But he does everything he can, and he's very good at it, Johnny, to try and ease into an interview so that it doesn't come on strong, like, "Hey, how is your new picture doing?" He's liable to say, "What a pretty dress," or if it's a man, "What a pretty suit." He tries very hard to put people at ease, and I believe he's a master at it.
Johnny Carson is about as better known than the President of the United States is. You know what I mean? He's just so recognizable. He's so well-respected. Everybody knows him. Everybody watches the show or wants to be on the show. You're in the position of being the executive producer of his show. Is it hard to tell him your opinion when his opinion differs? I mean, since he's such...
Well, I've been there.
Since he's Johnny Carson. I know you have.
I was pointing out that I wouldn't be there if I kept pointing out that my opinion was different than his. We do have, and this is no self-analysis. I knew Johnny long before I did The Tonight Show. When I was doing the Benny shows, he was on several occasions one of our stars. And we have, from the very beginning, had rather similar reactions to people and things. And in the 18 years that I've been doing this job with him, I think our opinions have become even more closely attuned. So it isn't really liable to be a series of arguments about how did you book this person or why didn't you book this person. We pretty well know what we're thinking as we think together.
Now, you sometimes do the warm-ups, don't you, before the show starts?
I sure do.
What are some of the stories you use for that? Do you do shtick when you're warming up the audience?
What a thing to say. actually, it's some jokes that I've learned over the years are non-topical and will last forever, and I indicate that this is one of those rare nights when Mr. Carson actually will be hosting the show, and I point out that it's important for people in the audience to know each other, so if everybody in the audience, when I count three, we'll turn around and shake hands with the person directly behind them. It'll all make it a friendly group, and I count one, two, three, and they all turn around. Of course, everybody is faced in the opposite direction. So that's the kind of intelligent, bright thing I do.
How do you usually go over?
Well, they're glad to be in out of the rain, and the price is right. It's pleasant, and the strange thing happens that even as a behind-the-scene person over the years, so many times Johnny has chatted with me on the air, that there is some kind of recognition that it is somebody truly connected with the show who is out there making a fool of himself.
Are there any shows that haunt you?
No, and I think I can explain why and not take too long in doing it. Our show is kind of like a baseball team in a baseball season. If you do one show a year or one show every 3 months or one show every 4 months, you have an awful lot of time to realize what a failure you've been. But we do kind of a baseball season. We do a show one night, and then that we hope it's wonderful. And if not that, we hope it's good, and we hope it isn't bad. But even if it's a great show or even if it's not such a good show, we do another show the next night, and we have no time except in self-analysis to decide why it wasn't good or even why it was very good. We just do the next show and hope that that'll be a good one.
You had lots of TV experience before joining The Tonight Show. You were the producer of Burns and Allen show for a while on TV. That always struck me as a very, almost like an experimental video show. You know how, of course, you know, how George Burns always used to watch the action on his TV monitor? What a very inventive idea for a program.
Indeed. I knew George and Gracie from vaudeville when they did an act called Lamb Chops. And then I knew them, of course, on radio. Then when the time came, and parenthetically, the time has always come perfectly for me. Certainly somebody has been watching over me because I had some sizable success here on Broadway, and just when that, I think, was about to end, somebody suggested that I direct motion pictures, and I did that at a couple of studios. And each time the success was bigger at the beginning than it was at the end, and just when I think the motion picture said, we can do without Fred, television came along, and Burns and Allen, and December Bride, and the Bob Cummings Show, and all those wonderful years with Jack Benny and My Three Sons. And then again, here I was having an absolutely wonderful time when out of the clear blue sky somebody said, Carson is looking for a new producer and think you might be that person. And all has blended together into a remarkable long period of time. So, if that's long-winded, to get back to George and Gracie, George, who is his own head writer, has been most perceptive, most knowledgeable in what will make people laugh, and understandably so, after all of those years in vaudeville. So we took the vaudeville act of George and Gracie and moved it into radio and then into television.
You know what I've always wanted to know about Gracie? How did she feel about always having to play the part of the stupid person? Because all the jokes were based on her not getting the joke.
Oddly enough, when the vaudeville act started, George was a comedian, and Gracie was the straight lady. And they didn't get any laughs that way, so they switched it around. And she felt just fine. She absolutely adored George. She enjoyed working. She knew that she was playing a part, and so I think did the public, because she was a very bright and knowledgeable young lady. So it was, you know, like Lucy didn't always trip and fall down, and Jack wasn't really miserly. I think the public recognized that they were playing characters. And she lived a very happy life with George, two children, and enormous success before she left. And isn't George remarkable after all these years to having the kind of career he has now?
Well, I want to talk with you more about other shows that you've produced on television, about your movies as well, including Bedtime for Bonzo. But first, we're going to take a short break. My guest is Fred DeCordova, who has produced The Tonight Show, the executive producer, since 1970. And he's written a memoir which is titled Johnny Came Lately. We'll talk more after this break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fred DeCordova, executive producer of The Tonight Show and author of the new book, Johnny Came Lately. Now, you directed the film Bedtime for Bonzo, one of the very many films that you directed. Now, when you were working on it, I'm sure that A, you never expected Ronald Reagan to become the president, and B, that you never expected this movie to be revived as an example of the most absurd part of the President of the United States' career. Did you really like the film when you made it, or were you thinking of, oh, this is just an assignment and then it'll sink without a trace? What was your attitude toward the movie?
Well, in order of your questioning, I have never thought that anybody I was directing was going to be the President of the United States. Yes, it was a regular program picture. Mr. Reagan, Ronnie, as I knew him then, was workmanlike, talented, inventive, and helpful actor. We thought the script was rather good, and so were the notices. I don't think a lot of us thought it would become one of the major discussionary items of political history, but I think both the president and I have seen it recently, or comparatively recently, and turned to each other and said, well, now what's all this fuss about? It was a pretty funny picture, and I think it was.
Was it ever hard for you to accept Ronald Reagan as President of the United States after you directed him as an actor?
No, not really. Ronnie had been the president of the Screen Actors Guild and was a studious and caring man, always. I think it was a surprise when he became governor, and he did such a good job as a governor of California. It didn't particularly surprise me that he would be presidential fodder. I know that in the White House, we were at a state dinner, Janet and I, Mr. Cordova, and after the toast of the dinner, we went walked through the White House before we went to hear Itzhak Perlman do some violin playing, and the president was talking to some people and called me over, and he said to those people, ladies and gentlemen, this is the man who is totally responsible for my being president of the United States. And a few eyebrows went up, and they turned around, and he said, yes, sir. Ladies, if he hadn't directed me in Bedtime for Bonzo, I'd still be in motion pictures and somebody else would be here.
Do you ever feel guilty when Johnny Carson tells Reagan jokes in the opening monologue, since the president is a friend of yours and a former colleague?
I think the answer is yes. But I also think that I've been there. He's made presidential jokes about every president since he's been on the air. I think those jokes come from a recognition that almost any politician, president more so than most, of course, is fair game. They chose that career, and if they do something silly or something that seems silly, or make a mistake, if Ford fell down, or Jimmy Carter's a kind of way of talking, I think that the comedians immediately are attracted to the front page.
I'll tell you, just as a sidebar here, with Carson, I always get the feeling that the political jokes don't necessarily represent his politics at all, but rather the politics of the writers.
No, not in disagreement with you. I don't know, after all the years and all the time I've spent with Johnny, whether he's a Republican or a Democrat, I have no idea.
Oh, really?
I think he's totally apolitical. I think, the monologues are written by writers and very talented writers, and Johnny. Johnny will, at that 10 o'clock call that I mentioned, that he calls me every day, I'm liable to get a point of view of what he has read in the paper. And I find it absolutely astounding that he seems to say on the air on, let's say, Tuesday, what the public, after hearing him, seems that they have felt all along on Wednesday. He's a real leader of public opinion, I believe.
My guest is Fred DeCordova, who's the executive producer of The Tonight Show, has been that since 1970. He's also written an autobiography titled Johnny Came Lately. We have to spend some time talking about your parents. Your father was a con man, and a very theatrical one at that, and made his living doing some some pretty underhanded things.
Well, I think you phrased it nicely. That's exactly what he did. He was a dear man. He came up with a number of scams that since then have been tried by other people. I think he kept the ball in the air longer than most.
Well, tell one of the scams that kept you alive when you were a child.
Well, one of the famous pyramid scheme was really attributed to a man called Charles Ponzi, which is where you promise a high rate of interest and then keep paying that high rate to the people who put in the money first. And you don't really invest the money. You just keep taking money from the newcomers and add to the proceeds of the earlier investors. And Charles Ponzi once said in my presence that he, Ponzi, had gotten the credit and the jail time for doing what my father had really invented. And I think today it's kind of has still exists in the form of the pyramid schemes.
Well, you also moved from hotel to hotel as a child, right?
Only when necessary. Father and mother would live, and I must give mother credit, she was a very able assistant in these schemes. You lived in the highest style you could, and rather lavishly. And then when money kept coming in, you just continued to live at the sunspots of the world. And then if money stopped coming in, you began signing more checks rather than paying for them. Remember, this is long before credit cards. And there was a time lapse between the time you did something that you shouldn't have and then anybody discovered it. And then we would move, leave a forwarding address, say we were dissatisfied with the service in that hotel, we're moving elsewhere, and please send the bill to us and don't hold us up because our auditors will be upset. And then we would wait until some money came in from some other new scheme, pay off the thing, and start all over again.
Were you ever asked to play a starring role in any of these schemes?
No, sir. My father was totally ashamed of what he did. And from a earliest age that I can remember, although I didn't know really why, he absolutely insisted on my being scrupulously honest. And nobody wants to go through life looking over his shoulder at what trouble may be catching up to him. I did have the fun of the last 20 years or so of their lives of calling them together when things got pretty good for me and saying, now I know what's been going on. It's over as of now. From now on, you're my mother and my father. You're retired people, and there'll be no more of this. And I don't think I ever saw two more relieved people in my life.
When you were a kid, what did you tell your friends that your parents did for a living?
Oh, it depended what I thought he was doing. I did not know.
You weren't in on this at all?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh.
I thought he was agent of the government. I thought he was an Internal Revenue man. I thought he was a explorer for the Baedeker guidebooks. It depended on whatever part he was playing, and I just thought he was very talented, and I'm omni-talented man.
I must say, your childhood must have been the perfect rehearsal for a show business career.
I think so. I think certainly I got to meet a lot of people under a lot of circumstances that normal young men wouldn't have.
And you learned to recognize a swindle when you saw one.
Not every time, but I'm a little more wary than most people.
You have been producing The Tonight Show since 1970.
Right.
Now, before you got there in 1970, in the 8 years preceding that, there were four different producers. Obviously, none of them lasted for very long, whereas you've been there for more than 17 years. Do you have any ideas of what made them go so quickly and what made you stay so long?
No, I don't. I do know that at various times I had those producers and I, three of the four of them, have crossed paths, and I thought all of them were very talented and very nice. And the man who was my immediate predecessor, a young gentleman called Rudy Tellez, I think had every reason to be terribly disappointed that he was terminated. But he waited around for the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks of my arrival on the scene and made everything as easy for me, told me everything that he thought would be of value to me, And instead of any mean-spirited attitude, he made my arrival on the scene a very happy and a very pleasant one. And I'm happy to say that he does very well now in another line of business.
If you don't mind me bringing this up, you're, I believe, 78 now, and Carson's in his 60s now.
Oh, gosh.
And everybody's always asking Carson if he's going to retire. What about you? Are you planning on retiring at all?
When he does.
Uh-huh. Do you have a pact or something?
No, I think we have this, that we're going to keep on doing this till I'm 100 and he's 82. He has a specific comment, and I think it's the total wrap-up of his attitude. He will keep on doing The Tonight Show as long as it is number one and as long as it is fun for him. And I believe that at no time in the history of The Tonight Show has the separation between The Tonight Show and any other talk radio version or talk variety version of a show ever has the separation been as wide. I think it is a more successful show now than it ever has been in the past. And as long as it stays like that, and he has fun doing it, and I believe he does, I know that he, more than most people, revolves his whole life around The Tonight Show. It is fun for him. It is hard work, but it is fun. I think we'll be around for a while.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you very much.
Well, you're a delight. But everybody says that.
Fred DeCordova has been the executive producer of The Tonight Show since 1970. His autobiography is titled Johnny Came Lately. It's published by Simon & Schuster. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.